Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, as usual. And, Jim, we start with the good, and we start with the Congress of the United States, which got a lot of work done yesterday. Some might like some of it more than others, but the one we're going to focus on is the vote to override a presidential veto for the first time in the presidency of Barack Obama. It's pretty late in the game, but nonetheless, it was overwhelming, 97-1 in the Senate, and nearly 350 members of the House of Representatives voting to override the president's veto of legislation that would allow families of 9/11 victims to sue Saudi Arabia. And obviously, there's a little bit of a debate, perhaps more than a little bit of a debate, about whether it's a good idea. But the overwhelming rejection of President Obama here, and even Democrats basically telling him to go pound sand when he still criticizes Congress for what it did on Wednesday. Finally, a little bit of spine in Congress here to really send the president a clear message.
There are a lot of things I like about this development, Greg, but high among them is the observation that you and I have to decide whether we think Barack Obama is right or whether we think every Democrat in the Senate except for Harry Reid is right. Julia, we're used to saying they're both wrong, but they can't both be wrong, right? So we actually, today's morning jolt, I kind of went through this. And to me, the simplest way of looking at the issue is, you know, we say, all right, everybody gets their day in court. Not just for the 9/11 families, but if you believe you've been wounded by the actions of a foreign government, should you have the right to take them to court? Or are they immune from lawsuits because they are a foreign government? One of the big arguments they make against this is like, well, look, if you allow the 9/11 families to sue the Saudi Arabian government for complicity or having some role in the 9/11 attacks, it's really going to complicate our relationship with Saudi Arabia. Well, so what? I mean, if they really did, then the Saudi Arabian government should be getting all kinds of problems, and the lawsuit should be the very least of them, right? I'm a little bit skeptical of it. It always starts to be a little bit too conspiratorial. But hey, it's a big royal family. The idea of somebody somewhere having a much friendlier relationship with Osama bin Laden, the Saudi, and the 15 of the 19 hijackers being Saudi Arabian, it's not crazy unthinkable. This is why we have a court. If you want to make that allegation, you have to generate the proof in court. And we're going to see, you know, decided by a jury, decided by a judge, whether there is validity to that argument or not. And if it is valid, then yes, Saudi Arabia should be, you know, having a great deal of very intense consequences. And if it's not true, then it's an unfair smear against the Saudi Arabian government, the royal family. This is what the courts are for. This is their role in our system. This is what they're supposed to do. It's not supposed to be handled by State Department diplomats who want to have good relationships with a foreign country. So my take was, looking at all this, and some people said, well, you know, if you do this, then foreign governments may retaliate. They might say that they can, you know, some people can sue the U.S. government in their own court system. Well, Greg, they can do this already. There's nothing stopping them. And people got to forget this. Malaysia, you know, had a trial in absentia for George W. Bush and every member of the Bush administration, declared them all to be war criminals, and then referred it to the International Criminal Court. Now, of course, there's no, you know, like, there's no consequence to that. I suppose if any members of the Bush administration went to visit Malaysia, somebody could argue that they've been convicted of a crime and they should be arrested. We have very little ability to control what other countries do. I think our system of laws is obligated to put the American people first. It's supposed to represent their people first, and they are entitled to that day in court, whether it's the 9/11 widows or other people who want to make the argument they have been unjustly wronged by a foreign government in violation of the law. So anyway, that's my take on it. So I have to say, one of those rare moments, you know, good job, not just to House and Senate Republicans, but to almost all of House and Senate Democrats. And, you know, Obama had this one coming.
Big time rebuke. And he, of course, during his Commander-in-Chief town hall, still said it was the wrong decision. But a lot of Democrats not being silent about their opposition to this. So this is from the news report you quote in the Morning Jolt today. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said aboard Air Force One before the House had voted that the Senate's override is, quote, the single most embarrassing thing the Senate has done since 1983, referring to the last time the Senate overrode a veto by such a large margin. The remark immediately infuriated lawmakers and staffers. One Democratic aide said, quote, it's amateur hour at the White House. So often you see a Democrat say that about a Democratic president. And then Democratic Senator Chris Coons of Delaware asking us to stand between 9/11 families and their day in court is asking a lot. So it's fascinating that Josh Earnest is really poking the bear after such a humiliating loss.
He is. And also, we should point out that, you know, Obama was asked about this in a special with Jake Tapper. And he said, well, look, you know, we have to do the right thing. And I understand some people are playing politics here. Every Democratic senator is he never plays politics.
Never.
All of his critics always play politics, whether they're Democrats or they're Republicans. He never gives his, you know, those who see things differently the benefit of the doubt. And he wonders why he has such a bad relationship with Capitol Hill.
Clearly. I remember TPP when some of the Democrats started to go south with him on that. And he said the exact same thing about them. It's exactly. He's the only one who's above the fray and the only one who's reasonable when it comes to all these different issues. Just despicable. So good job, Congress. Good job, Congress. All right. On to the bad martini now. And this is courtesy of Hot Air as well as Fox News. A lot of conservatives, including Sean Hannity, big surprise, are putting a lot of credence in online polls in response to Monday's debate. Ala Pundit over at Hot Air quotes him saying Tuesday night, I have it in front of me. Time Magazine, Drudge Report, CNBC, The Hill, CBS. The only one that has Hillary winning is CNN, and they're the Clinton News Network. The Clinton News Network poll, as it happened, Ala Pundit writes, was the only one of those polls that was conducted scientifically. There was another scientific poll that Breitbart did that was closer than CNN's, but still had Clinton winning the debate. So it's not just Hannity over at Fox. Steve Doocy and Brian Kilmeade cited these online polls. So did Martha McCallum. So Dana Blanton, who's head of Fox polling, sends out a memo, and here's what it writes. Dana Blanton, the vice president of public opinion research at Fox News, explained in the memo obtained by Business Insider that online polls like the one on Drudge, Time, etc., where people can opt in or self-select, are really just for fun. Quote, as most of the publications themselves clearly state, the sample obviously can't be representative of the electorate because they only reflect the views of those internet users who have chosen to participate, Blanton wrote. As the Fox News executive pointed out, users who participate in such polls must have internet access, be online at the time of the poll, be fans of the website in question, and decide to participate. Quote, another problem. We know some campaigns, groups of supporters encourage people to vote in online polls and flood the results, she wrote. These quickie-click items do not meet our editorial standards. Jim, obviously you like to gravitate towards news that perhaps backs up your opinion, especially if you host an opinion show like Hannity does. But for heaven's sake, you can talk about the sample size maybe in the CNN poll, which obviously has a lot more Democrats. But to pretend that online polls matter, good grief.
Yeah. And I'm speaking as a guy who spent a good portion of 2004, 2008, 2012 looking at polls, dissecting polls, looking at sample sizes, looking at partisan makeup. Of a sample and whether that's, you know, a likely representation of you're going to get on election day. Look, generally polls are accurate. I can hear people screaming and being upset about that. You know, now when I say generally, you're going to get some outliers. You're going to get some ones that are the really bad, or the sample's too small, or the sample skews too much to one demographic or the other. And sometimes you'll see years where just collectively they end up being off. You could point to that in the last midterm election. Polling understated how Republican candidates were going to do well in both senatorial and gubernatorial races by about 3 or 4 points. And you can point to 2012, where most of the polls had Romney very close and ended up being a 4-point win for Barack Obama. This, you know, you're going to get a little bit of a margin, but generally speaking, you don't get them way off. I get after a debate, you want to hear your guy won. You want to hear good news. You want to hear not only it was your assessment that your guy did terrific, but everybody else agrees with you that your guy did terrific. For a long time, I thought people understood this. And when somebody would say, oh, the Drudge poll had me winning. I mean, people have found video, Greg, of Sean Hannity scoffing at the online polls that showed Ron Paul winning in 2008 and 2012. Like, so it was at one point he knew these were, you know, you could have people flood. You go on the, you know, the Ron Paul chat board and say, hey, everybody, make sure you vote in this poll. You can vote as many times as you want. Let's, you know, let's make sure everybody knows that he won and we think he did the best. You're free to do that. This is not a crime. This is not anything, you know, but this is one of the things that you shouldn't put too much faith in an online poll, particularly if you're allowed to vote more than once, because the people who are going to care the most are the ones who are the most rabid partisans, who are, and they do this. So, there are other people who have taken, more normal sample sizes, and generally they've shown Hillary has won. And not always a huge reaction, not always by a huge margin, but, that kind of aligns with what most people saw Monday night. He had a pretty bad night. She had a pretty good night. Although I think they're safe to say some corners of the media are turning it into the most one-sided, landslide ever. It's kind of embarrassing to have your boss come out and tell you, stop spreading nonsense. You know better than this. Don't tell people that red is blue. Don't tell people that up is down. This is what the point of news is, right? It's not to tell people what to think. It's to tell them what's happening. And I think people have forgotten this. I think the entire philosophy of narrative crafting and, advance the narrative and don't show anything that contradicts the narrative. We have justifiably whacked the, liberal media or mainstream media about this for a long time. Writing media has decided to basically adopt the exact same tactics.
Yeah, I think once we dealt with the skewed poll phenomenon from 4 years ago and that kind of blew up in her face, online polls is not the next place to go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in that, everybody kind of had said, look, there's no way that the Democrats are going to have as big an advantage in 2008. If it's not going to be, Democrats, I believe it was like, Democrats had seven more percentage points of the electorate was Democrats or self-identified Democrats than self-identified Republicans. And all through 2012, Republicans, including myself, were like, okay, it's not going to be like that again. That was a unique set of circumstances in 2008. It's going to be a lot closer. It was dead even in 2004. It'll be something like that. Well, I believe it was either, depending on which pollster you look at, Democrats by 5 or Democrats by 6 in the exit polls. So it was almost as lopsided an electorate in 2012. The Obama turnout machine pretty much worked. I guess the lesson I took from that is saying that the things you think can never happen can happen. And that's, a good thing to keep in mind. But when you go in convinced that your guy won and everything's going terrific, that's where you end up.
On to the crazy martini now, and time for today's episode of How Did Gary Johnson Embarrass Himself on National Television Today? Or yesterday, as it turns out. This has been a rough month for Gary Johnson, really on MSNBC every time. First, he was on Morning Joe about a month ago and was asked what he thought about Aleppo. And he said, and what is Aleppo? So that didn't go well for him. Then when he found out that he wasn't going to qualify for the first debate, he had an interview sitting on a bench with Casey Hunt and stuck his tongue out while still talking and explained that he could basically spout out nonsense up on stage and still improve his numbers just by getting the attention of being there. So now he's at a town hall with Chris Matthews, and he's sitting next to his running mate, William Weld, former governor of Massachusetts. And as much as we don't really care for Chris Matthews, this is not exactly a gotcha question, and Gary Johnson still fumbles it anyway.
Name a foreign leader that you respect.
I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment in the former president of Mexico.
But I'm giving you the whole world.
I know.
Anybody in the world you like. Anybody. Pick any leader.
The former president of Mexico.
Which one?
I'm having a brain.
Name anybody.
Fox. Zedillo.
Okay, who's your favorite foreign leader? Get him off the hook. Name a foreign leader you respect.
He was terrific.
Any foreign leader?
Merkel.
Okay, Merkel. Okay, fine. Save yourself. Can't argue with that.
Jim, do you think Bill Weld just goes back to his hotel room at night and smacks his head against the desk?
I'm just picturing him. He goes, there's a large bottle of scotch. He pours himself a double. Contemplates the ice. No ice. He makes it a triple. And he just suddenly starts fuming. Why? Name a foreign leader. Just try one. Whoever you name, as long as you don't say Putin, we're going to be okay, right? Now, here's the thing. There's been some changing of the guard in places like England or the UK.
Yes.
Maybe you can't think the current. If you say David Cameron, oh, wait, he's not there anymore or something like that. Look, I don't think Gary Johnson is a dumb guy. It's just really unfortunate for him that he keeps coming across that way in these interviews. And, we've all had brain farts. We've all had moments where our minds goes blank when we can't think of something. People who listen to this podcast have probably heard. Greg, you've saved me more than a couple of times. The senator who you're like, Harry Reid? Yes, that guy. The one we don't like. Yeah. But it's not good to have these on stage over and over again. And look, fairly or not, Gary Johnson is associated with marijuana legalization. He is associated with marijuana smoking. He is an investor in a legalized marijuana company. He is an open touting, you know, hooray for marijuana guy. So when he acts spacey, it really reaffirms a negative stereotype that's going to stick to him. You know, now if he had come out and, for example, you know, as Howard Dean wasn't speculating that that Gary Johnson does coke. He doesn't come out hyper and frenzied and eyes bugging out and you know, maniacal or anything like that. Every libertarian always complains, God, it's such a cheap, easy joke to say that Gary Johnson's a pothead. It's so late. Well, he keeps reaffirming it with behavior like this. And maybe, you know, it's unfortunate, but you know what? Study up, brush up, get ready, and then go. Because the other great thing is that he says, I guess I'm having an Aleppo moment. Reminding people of the last time he couldn't think of something. You know? Now, that one, I think you could argue, okay, that's kind of a gotcha question. There's no con. You go, most people would say, what are you going to do about Syria, right? What are you going to do about the Syrian civil war? What are you going to do about ISIS? What are you going to do about the Assad regime? What's his name on MSNBC? This is my Gary Johnson moment. So, you know, who said, what are you going to do about Aleppo?
Yeah, I think it was Barnacle.
Barnacle, okay. So, you know, if you could argue, okay, devoid of context, a lot of people might not instantly recognize the reference to Aleppo. And Gary Johnson said for a moment he thought it was an acronym or something like that. Very understandable and reasonable. Not being able to think of any foreign leader that you like at all. A little tougher to explain. I don't know what Gary Johnson's going to do to unwind after a long day. Actually, I know exactly what Gary Johnson's going to do to unwind after a tough day.
That is definitely where my thoughts first went. It also reminded me that, you know, the libertarians want to disengage from all our, not all of our, but a lot of our foreign commitments and
you
not be the.
You can't get much more disengaged than that.
Exactly. We're going to not get involved by knowing nothing.
Huh? What?
All right. Well, Jim, we'll see what Gary Johnson, he's still got a few weeks left to add some other whoppers to this pile. Talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.